always been me and Jimmy Cole's dream to write a turtle movie. Like when the reboot happened, it's like,
damn it.
It's like, fuck. Like after the second one bombed, it's like, okay, let's give it a few years. Maybe the new turtles will kill it. And then in like 5 years, they'll want to I'll send them random stuff. Like, hey, in our reboot script, I want to have Leatherhead. And he'll just be like, okay. it's just this shit that we've been talking about forever.
What's up? This is Movies On Up, Sun, Sea, Sex, and Slaughter. None of those words are used to this. Well, I guess if you listen to the brood downstairs, maybe one of them applies to my co-host, Mr. Dave Pacella.
Yep, that's me.
Seated right across me, that's Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. Sun, Sea, Sex, and Slaughter is alliteration. It is also our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, you can send your guest to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guests on our Facebook page, which lives at facebook.com/moviesonup. Or you can tweet your guest to us, @moviesonup, on the Twitter, if you are correct. And if we choose you, we will be dreading sending out a prize package your
Join
way.
Join the club of winners.
Yes, very large club, such as it is. This week, it is 420, and if you don't think of Adolf Hitler, maybe the next thing you think of is marijuana. There are a lot of drug movies, drug comedies even specifically, we could have done for this week. But a sequel to a movie that Dave and I both like an awful lot hits theaters, and that is Broken Lizard's Super Troopers 2. So we thought, all right, we got a drug week, and we got Super Troopers 2 coming out, so why not go back and look at the original drug-filled
Super
Troopers.
Yeah, that 420 release date is not coincidental.
Not a coincidence, no.
I say as somebody who released a web series on 420 like 6 or 7 years ago.
Was that Juggalo Ohio?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we specifically released it on 420.
I actually just watched the first episode a couple days ago.
For the first time?
Yes.
Well, you still haven't support.
You still haven't seen The Godfather, so I've seen one episode of Juggalo Ohio. Not as good as The Godfather, I'll say that. At any rate, Super Troopers, a movie that near and dear to both of our hearts, opened on Valentine's Day. It was also President's Day weekend of 2002, which with its wide release, where it made $6.2 million, which was good for ninth place that weekend. Denzel's John Q won the weekend with over $20 million, followed by the Britney Spears epic Crossroads.
I was there opening weekend.
I wasn't there opening weekend, but I did see it in the theaters because that's the kind of
opening
creep
night.
I am. Yikes. I think that movie made like $9 million opening weekend, so your $10 was part of that. Return to Neverland, Big Fat Liar, and Collateral Damage round out the top five for that week. Troopers went on to gross $18.4 million domestically, which puts it in 3,498th place on the all-time domestic list. It sits one single spot above this Cameron Crowe 1992 comedy. One single spot. It's Singles.
That's it. Singles. That's it. I couldn't think of the name. I knew what you were.
Yep. Yep. It was just that simple. Next, it sits one spot below Adam Wingert's 2013 debut.
You're next?
Yes, you're next indeed. For a little more context, last year's failed Chips reboot landed in 3487th place all time. And currently, although it's only been out for about a week or so, Tyler Perry's latest, Acrimony, is at 3,455th place all time with about $18.8 million. Super Troopers was the first of the Broken Lizard movies to get a wide theatrical release. 2009's The Slam and Salmon opened in 11 theaters, and Puddle Cruiser went straight to video in 96. 2006's Beer Fest actually tops the Broken Lizard board with just over $19 million, then followed by Super Troopers. And it's 2004 follow-up, Club Dread, which tanked with $5 million in the box office, but I like that movie an awful lot.
Of all of them, Club Dread's my favorite. I think Club Dread is the best movie that they've made, both from a cohesive movie from front to back and from an entertaining standpoint. Maybe it's my love of horror.
Yeah.
But I think it's their best overall movie. And we'll get into that later, because the rest of them, they have two different types of movies. Super Troopers and Beer Fest are one, and then Slammin' Salmon is my least favorite, maybe next to Puddle Cruiser, because Puddle Cruiser is pretty bad.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that was just a bunch of college kids making a movie on their own, so whatever. But
before we jump into some more box office stuff that we're going to do at the end, I am really glad we decided to do this movie. This was one that was in heavy rotation for me at the end of my high school career. It's one of those movies that I don't think any of us knew very much about. But then after watching it in the theaters, you know, one friend would see it one weekend and come back and be like, oh, shit, you guys got to go see this. And then it kind of spread around till when it came out on DVD, you know, we were all kind of watching it somewhat religiously. And it had been many years since I've seen this movie from front to back, and I'd forgotten how much I like it. So many sections of the movie, I'd forgotten all about the Germans.
I think it was our wrestling episode where we talked about The Princess Bride, where
yeah.
I remember The Princess Bride as these segments. This is very much the same. You remember shenanigans
right.
and the meow and the bear. Like, you remember that kind of stuff. The bulletproof cup. Like, you
yeah.
may not remember exactly the order because it feels like a sketch movie almost. Like
it does.
It's from a comedy troupe that strung together a movie of great funny parts. And I think given that approach to it, does a pretty decent job of stringing together a competent movie. I don't want to say that that's a negative thing, that it's just a bunch of great segments crammed together to make
there
a movie.
There is a cohesive story.
Because there is a cohesive storyline throughout it. And you could argue that a lot of the shenanigans move that story forward. And it is fun. And this movie, I feel like, was made, you know, it made money at the box office.
It did.
Compared to the budget, $18 million, fantastic. Panned, hated by critics. I think it was like a 35% on Rotten Tomatoes. But Roger Ebert, I think, had the best. I don't remember word for word, but it was like, I kind of want to recommend this movie, but I can't. But I could see why you would want to. Essentially is what his thing was, to where, like, I can't sit here and say it's a good movie, but you'll have a good time.
It's an entertaining movie.
It's an entertaining movie. And it didn't do well. Like, it did decent money at the box office, but was panned. But then it found its life on DVD, VHS, and, like, Comedy Central re-airing mm-hmm. and basic cable re-airings, because that's how this movie's written. It's one of those to where you can turn it on at any point. When they wrote the script, they tried to have a joke every 6 seconds. So you can turn it on. The advantage of making it like a sketch movie is that even if you catch it in the middle of one of those, like, quote-unquote sketches, a minute or two later, you're starting the next one. So almost anywhere in this movie, you can just pick up, and it's funny.
If for whatever reason you have to leave in the middle of watching this movie, I don't think you're like, oh, but I got to find out about the drug, but whatever.
The drugs. Like,
yes.
That's the whole point of the movie. Like, that's the plot that's thrown in there to keep it all together. But it's, like, the least important part of the movie. But it's thrown together to where you can just watch it at any point. And it's one of those where I am glad I sat down and watched it from beginning to end. I remembered the whole thing.
Yeah.
We could have done this episode had I not rewatched it. I'm glad I did, though, because it is funny. I do love it. I do laugh. But just as you're watching it, you just keep remembering, like, oh, I know the next line, and it's funny. Like, I can't wait. And I feel like most people will tell you they've seen Super Troopers, but I don't think that most people could tell you the last time they've seen it from front to back, but they know the whole movie.
Yeah, because I think it's one of those ones that when you stumble on, if you have the ability to, you probably watch it a few times right at the... Especially, yeah, this movie came out when I was 18. So, of course, that was the funniest shit I could imagine. And we watched it a ton. So now, I mean, I know the plot. I don't need to watch it from cover to cover. But I had seen this and ingested it, and it was so deep within my brain that I would, as the lines were being said, yeah, I would realize that, oh, shit, I know about the next 30 seconds of dialogue in this movie, but it's something I hadn't thought of since the last time I watched either the whole movie or that particular sketch. But we talk about movies that are really, really quotable. This, I think, is too, but I had forgotten how quotable it was because I had just, like, there was a banker's box in my brain somewhere full of mustache rides.
Who wants a mustache ride?
Schnozberries and all sorts of stuff.
So many scenes, like, oh, why don't you sit on Uncle Rabbit's lap? Oh, that's not a good idea there. Like, Carl Ramrod, say Carl Ramrod. Like, there's so many lines here.
I wrote it down.
Yeah. There's so many good just jokes and just lies.
I can't walk past one of the coolers in the like the gas station and see the large liter of Pepsi and not think of liter of cola.
Liter of cola. Is he going to spit on that burger? Don't spit on that cop's burger.
Does that look like spit to you?
Yeah. It's so funny. And the thing is, you could tell it was written as a group because I don't think there's one breakout star. I think Farva would be the closest, but he's the butt of all the jokes.
Yes.
Like, there's not one that's written so much better than everybody else. And that's consistent with all their movies, I think, is they do a really good job of spreading
it out.
They
share the wealth, yeah.
And, you know, that's why I don't think none of them have been a breakout from here. Chandrasekhar does a lot of directing.
Yeah.
Like, he's done a lot of TV. He had some movies. He did Dukes of Hazzard. He does The Babymakers. Mm-hmm. But, like, as a whole, you don't really see the Broken Lizard guys show up in other stuff.
Unless it's Jay's, like, Dukes of Hazzard and stuff like that, they show up, yeah.
There wasn't the one breakout star. There's not the Harry Styles of this crew or all of their movies. Like, I think Club Dread, Heffernan gets a little bit more of that leading man kind of push, but it's just so funny.
There's also Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
You know, this one in Beer Fest specifically, like those guys, it's communism. They all share equally. None of them is more important than the other one.
And then you get the supporting cast. Marissa Coughlin, they liked in Teaching Mrs. Tingle. Like, they reached out to her specifically. Brian Cox, who's a legend, asked them to be in it. He reached out to them to be in it because he felt like he was always being cast as a pedophile or a Nazi, and he wanted to do comedy, so he felt like he had the chops, and he thought a movie like this would kind of show that off. And then you have a young Joey Kern, who still people don't really know. He's Sweet Lou in Grind, and he was great in Bloodsucking Bastards or whatever it was a few years ago. And one of the most interesting, Jeffrey Arend is in this movie. He was a voice on Daria, but this is his first movie role. He's one of those you know him to see him because he's been in stuff. He's married to Christina Hendricks somehow. But Broken Lizard guys, for every one of their movies, they have one role that they cast the first person to audition for it. They decide, like, okay, whoever auditions first for this, that's who gets it. That was Jeffrey Aaron's role. He was the first audition. He got it. I'd say marrying Christina Hendricks built a pretty good career out of that. And he's funny in it. Of the three college teens, like, he gets the most to do right off the bat, where he eats the weed and he eats the mushrooms, and based on a true story. This whole movie came from a couple of them would drive around the country hitting weddings. A bunch of their friends got married, so they would just road trip to these weddings. And they would get pulled over while they're just really, really high. And they just thought, like, what if the cops knew we were high and just messed with us? Or if the cops were just high? And that's where the whole movie came from. And
certainly, like, specifically, I think the scene right at the beginning, the Schnozberry scene, even the scene where they pull over the Germans, like, that scene has nothing to do with the movie.
No.
It's not
Gaffigan
a setup.
Scene.
Yeah, all those are just kind of...
Gags,
they're just gags put in there.
That fit in there.
Right, because they had clearly written those while they were high and on the road.
And, I mean, there are rumors coming from the cast themselves that a lot of this movie was filmed while some of them were on mushrooms, and they say that there's a large chunk of them where at least two of them, at no point I don't think all five of them were, but I think...
There had to be a DD.
I think at least two of them. And if you watch when they're all getting high with the German guy watching the cartoon...
John Chimpo.
If you look at them, you can pick out two that, like, oh, those guys are on mushrooms. Like, if you watch it knowing that, like, you can just see, like, oh, those two dudes are tripping.
Those,
like,
are the ones that are tweaking.
So, because I don't look at it as a stoner movie or a drug movie, but it is. I mean, it's very much about that. I mean, they, like, did you watch that Johnny Chimbo cart? Yeah, there's nothing there. Maybe you need to re-watch it. No, there's nothing there. He's just holding the big thing of weed. Like, maybe you missed something.
It doesn't seem like Cheech and Chong, or there were a ton of movies in that era that were drug comedies. Harold and Kumar.
The Half-Baked.
There were a ton of those that do seem like a drug comedy. They do a lot of drugs in this movie. They drink more than I remembered in this movie. But most of the comedy, I think, doesn't necessarily involve the drugs or the booze.
It's a secondary thing.
Yeah.
It's not reliant on that.
Which Beer Fest very much...
is all about.
Right, yeah.
And Beer Fest is the other one that I feel like that was kind of a return, because I feel like Club Dread, they thought, okay, let's make like a full movie that's yes. a one, whereas this is a bunch of little segments that string together a cohesive movie. Let's just make a cohesive movie. Club Dread is that, because I remember Club Dread as a whole. I don't remember maybe specific parts. I remember sure. certain lines, but it's definitely not like, oh, I remember this 3-minute chunk, and I remember this 3-minute. I love that movie, but it was different than this. And then I feel like Beer Fest went back to this, because Beer Fest is very much the Super Trooper structure, yeah. where it's all in chunks with the tricking off the frogs and the second Heffernan. It's very much made for Comedy Central to just, you plop down and you have an hour to kill. You're mm-hmm. not going to watch a whole movie, but it's there. You're going to watch it. And then Slam and Salmon tried to return to kind of how the Club Dread was, and it has its moments. But I feel like that they also tried to expand a little bit more, because Club Dread gave other people that aren't them chances to shine. And they did the same with Slam and Salmon.
A lot of the customers in Slam and Salmon, I mean, Will Forte, there are a ton of people that show Gaffigan's in that too.
Yeah. It's just funny, Heffernan did not want Gaffigan in Super Troopers, because there had been a string of he was going on auditions and he kept losing out jobs to Jim Gaffigan. So when they made this movie, he did not want to cast Jim Gaffigan, because he'd lost so many jobs to him before. But he ended up in it, and he did great. And yeah. he's in the sequel.
Spoiler alert. Yeah, yeah. I had to look. I was looking at the cast for the second one.
He's in the trailers.
I'm
yeah.
happy. I haven't watched a trailer yet. I know, surprise. I still don't do that.
Just how it was made, I think, is a fascinating story in itself. They made Puddle Cruiser on their own, and they kind of wanted to make a bigger movie, and they were trying to sell it, and studios wanted to give him like $5-6 million, but oh, we want Ben Affleck in it. Oh, we want somebody else to direct. And they turned that all down. Ended up, a friend of one of their dads had just retired from Wall Street and wanted to get into the movie business, so he fronted $1.25 million. So they made it for basically a fifth of what they would have had. They made it on their own. They made it their way.
And it looks like it.
It is very much theirs. You can tell yeah. there's no studio interference in it.
Or no studio help either.
Yeah. And as awful of a human being as he is, there is a good Harvey Weinstein story behind this. Is he helped sell it. He liked it, but he couldn't tell if it was funny. He said there was something there that he liked, but maybe he just didn't know comedy because he didn't get it. When it played at Sundance, he told him, hang out with me at the party. They hung around Harvey Weinstein at this party. He had no intention of buying their movie, but he had so much clout that people seeing them talking to Harvey Weinstein would think that, oh, there's a bidding war for this movie.
Yeah.
They ended up selling it for $3 million. They tripled the budget there, and then it went on to make $23 worldwide combined. So it was profitable.
Oh, for sure. Profit, generally, that's what gets a sequel. It's not because, oh, the story was really good. We ought to have that. I don't give a shit about your story. It is all about the Benjamin, so to speak. But it's been 16 years. The Broken Lizard guys have had plenty of time to write it. And I actually kind of feel good about the fact that it's been so long. You've mentioned that Jay's been really active. He's directed a ton of TV stuff. If you've watched it.
Some of your favorite TV shows.
Right.
I don't care what your favorite TV shows are.
If you've watched a network comedy in the past 10 years, you know, he's directed a couple episodes of it. And the rest of the guys have shown up here and there and stuff, but they've had plenty of time to write this script.
What I like about it is it got panned, but it made money, and they were able to make another movie. Once it found that second life, made Club Dread, it didn't do that great. But by then, Super Troopers had found a following. They easily could have done Super Troopers 2 either instead of Club Dread, or after Club Dread instead of
Beer Fest.
So they easily could have just went right back to it then. But instead, you got Beer Fest, you got Slammin' Salmon, you got different Broken Lizard stuff. And I get that. I get not wanting to just be the Super Troopers guys. Because they did build a Broken Lizards brand. They tour as Broken Lizard. They've made a career, whether they haven't been making the movies. I think the timing is right on this, because they always had ideas. The original idea was to make Super Trooper 76, where it's a prequel and they all play their dads just as state troopers, which I think is hilarious. Yeah. I mean, that's a funny idea. That's a different approach
to a sequel.
They could
still do that.
They could still do that, and it'd be great. It could be the third one, but I feel like the timing was right. This movie's had 15 years to gesticulate, whatever that word is.
And, to ferment.
Yeah, and they're doing it the same way they did the first one. But in the first one, when you turn down $5 million from a studio, there's not really any other way to make that money unless you find somebody to give you that money. And they got lucky, and they did find somebody that they were able to get that money back to them. But then they crowdfunded this movie, which I think is the perfect way for them to make this, because even though it does have its cult following and it does have that 16 years, 17 years of history, you take it to a studio, they're still going to want to put their studio hands on it. And not doing that worked for them the first time, so there's really no reason to think that it won't work for them again. So whether it's good or bad, you know you're getting their version of Super Troopers 2.
Which I think the people that are crowdfunding, that's what you want.
Yeah.
I mean, you fell in love with it the first time because it was theirs.
Yeah.
You're going to get more of that. But you get more of things. I mean, this wasn't a Hollywood movie. It was independently done. But if Super Troopers would have been a studio movie, you look at the movies that came out around that time. Also in that year was Van Wilder, which had a really shitty sequel minus Ryan Reynolds a couple years after that.
And that was before Ryan Reynolds was a bankable star.
Right, for sure. But, I mean, he carried that movie.
Oh, absolutely. Tara Reid. He was the only, he was so good in that movie.
Yeah.
It's a dumb, terrible, it's not terrible.
Yeah.
Got a lot of good gags in it, but his charm carried that movie.
For sure. They went ahead and made a sequel in relative short order with that. Yeah. Speaking of Cal Penn, Harold and Kumar got a sequel.
Got three of them.
Yeah. Not too long after White Castle. And then even Deuce Bigalow got a sequel. If there was money to be made on comedies, which generally are lower budget, they're easier to make, they don't sit for 16 years. So other than the fact that these guys just didn't feel like doing it at the time.
They wanted to do other stuff.
Right, wanted to do other stuff.
And I'm glad we got Club Dread out of it.
Perhaps a justification for, there's been 16 years. Maybe nobody else really wanted to help them out with it. Because if you look at $18 million just domestically and 23 globally, which nothing to sneeze at. But
For $1.25 million.
Exactly.
On
the budget.
And from a studio standpoint, they paid $3 million for it.
Right. Everybody made money on it. But I'm trying to put into perspective what this movie actually did. Because you hear $18 million and Tyler Perry's movie opened to that last weekend. So you're like, oh, boy, in its whole run, that's all it made. Yes, but I think what's important to remember about this movie is an R-rated comedy. The sweet spot for R-rated comedies, and it's just my own, I guess I'm putting my own limits on it. I kind of think that it sort of started back up in 99 with American Pie, and I think it hit its peak with The Hangover
in
09.
In a way.
There were certainly some before.
It was a weird, because American Pie was an R-rated comedy, but it was a teen comedy. It was easy to classify. It was an R-rated high school comedy, which we hadn't really had. In South Park, R-rated comedy, but had that South Park built in. It didn't really pave the way for R-rated comedies until something like Knocked Up in the Apatow movies and Hangover. That's what really proved that R-rated comedies are a legitimate thing. Even though American Pie kind of opened the door for it. Look at it like Blair Witch Project kind of opened the door for found footage, but the trend didn't really kick off until Paranormal Activity so many years later. I feel like it's the same kind of thing, where American Pie opened the door for it, but it was really kicked over by Apatow and Hangover. And
I think Apatow did take it to a bit of a different level, but even just the American Pie movies themselves. First one made $102 million. American Wedding made 104. The second made 145. They were all massively successful. You throw a Scary Movie in there, that was at over 152. The Apatow movies certainly are up there.
Even Scary Movie, that was a spoof. I feel like those were all their own thing. Those movies could be successful, whereas Judd Apatow could make any R-rated comedy and it would do well.
I mean, I still think.
I don't think I'm justifying my point. I know what I'm trying to say, but I don't think I'm saying it that well.
Comedy is a broad genre. Even within there, you've got, stoner comedies, high school comedies. You've got your spoofs, which was certainly what Scary Movie was. So many of them can kind of fit in there that were sort of diluting the pool. But my point in 99 through 09 is after 2009 with The Hangover, they made a couple sequels to that, which were varying degrees of success there. But I think there's been a little bit of a drawback now in R-rated comedies. I mean, we were getting 5, 6, 7, 8 of these a year. on average, they are making about $56 million. That includes
the Hangovers.
Yeah, the Hangovers, the stuff that made, and stuff that made over $150 million. One of the things I think you have to keep in mind with Super Troopers is, yeah, it was a wide release, but only on 1,700 screens. Which even at the time
with no
was low.
Stars, no names. Like Brian Cox is a legend, but he's not packing
the theater.
Yeah. Marissa Coughlin had a decent run at that point, but she wasn't packing theaters. So
when we talked a lot more box office, per screen average was something that we looked at a lot. The per screen average on this movie was over $10,000, and there was no studio behind it. There was no recognizable star behind it, not a giant marketing campaign behind it. It releases in February. Not necessarily a recipe for success, but at $10,000, I mean, that's a higher per screen average than Van Wilder, which had the National Lampoon's name behind it.
Yeah.
And I mean, Tara Reid, who was in American Pie.
Circling back to where the original point was, is the waiting 16 years. I feel like if we would have gotten a Super Troopers 2, I feel like a studio would have seen, we can make it for $5 million, and it'll probably make $20-25 million. Even if it slightly overperforms, you're still making profit. That's how the Paranormal Activities were made. The first one was made for less than $1 million. The second, the budget went up by like $1 million or so, and they still just brought in all this profit.
Yeah, it would have seemed like a cash grab at that point.
But it would have been a studio's version of Super Troopers 2. There are some things that worry me. I do like that it was crowdfunded, that they made it on their own. But when you look at comedies with these far out sequels that are so far behind, you look back at like Anchorman 2 or Zoolander 2, both pretty terrible movies, both very far away from their predecessor. What I fear is that they haven't really duplicated the success of Super Troopers. Like, even now, that is their most noticeable movie.
Beerfest made more money.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think when you say Broken Lizard,
the average person on the street, they're going to think Super Troopers. So there is that fear that, do they repeat a lot? Is it just rehashing a lot? Like Jib Gaffigan has a scene. It's going to be very similar to the meow scene. So how much of that is in there? And something that worries me is you talked about like them maturing. Like, I would love to see these guys 16, 17 years later. I believe I read that this takes place 3 months after the original, which is less interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd rather see them this long after. But if it does well, we could get a Super Troopers 3 that does pick up present day, or we could get that prequel. I feel like there's enough there, and they're funny enough guys, and they work so well together that I'm excited for it. I do think it'll be funny.
Because it has been so long, you look at Anchorman and Zoolander, certainly Anchorman, giant, huge success of a movie. What do you think the expectations are for a movie like Super Troopers that didn't blow the doors off 2002? I think it was more than respectable for its time. Certainly, I think it holds up better than a lot of the Freddy Got Fingered and stuff like that from that era. I think it's funnier today than those movies certainly are. But what is a reasonable expectation for this movie?
I don't know, because it's in a weird spot. Like, it's a week after a Rock blockbuster movie, and it's going up against an Amy Schumer comedy. So, I mean, it's not the only comedy, but it is a low budget, and I feel like it's gotten decent press. The crowdfunding thing, they brought in a lot more than they were hoping to get. And there was a time for a movie being crowdfunded, it had made the most money. So I don't know, because it's, you're talking April, and we've been seeing some Acrimony, I think, only came in second or third, and it had $18 million. So there's money out there. There's money being spent. I think if this makes in that 12 to 15 range, I think it's hard not to consider it a success. Do I think that's where it tops out at? I think 12 to 15 is probably best case scenario, but I think it's very doable.
That's kind of what I was getting at. I think it's reasonable to assume that it's going to open larger than the first one did, based solely on the fact that I do think that there wasn't anybody waiting for this movie in 2002. But in the intervening 16 years, yes, people are waiting for it. Obviously, ticket prices are higher, so we're not really adjusting for inflation. But I do think that $8 million on the low end, I think, is absolutely doable. And $15 million on the high end, yeah, I would be surprised if it did more than that, because we still haven't seen a giant marketing push from it, and I don't think we're going to.
The Rock is kind of hard to predict, because sometimes this stuff opens well, sometimes it doesn't.
Sometimes he makes Jumanji, which just passed Jurassic Park for all-time domestic.
Sometimes it carries over, and it's a slower burn. So I don't really think that second weekend of Rampage is going to be that big of an issue. Ready Player One will have slowed down by then. Black Panther will have, I mean, Black Panther's still making $10 million. The only thing that I think is it splits that comedy crowd where if you're going out with your girlfriend to see a comedy, how many are going to be able to convince them to see the Stoner Cop movie compared to the Amy Schumer movie? So I think that's the only thing that worries me, is that that might kind of split the vote there.
How many comedy dollars are out there that weekend?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, summer kicks off the week after. That's the week right before Avengers. So I think 12 to 15, I think, is reasonable. I think closer to probably 12. I mean, that may only be third or fourth place, but I think that money's there right now.
And even if it's 12 to 15, and let's say it ends up at 25 to 30, the success in Super Troopers wasn't at the box office necessarily. It was the life after.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where, you know, a lot of good comedies, that's where they live, because the jokes are so funny, even the second, third, fourth time. You want to keep watching Anchorman because it's funny.
And I think it's going to be one of those word-of-mouth movies. It's either going to have a major drop-off that second weekend, or it's going to do pretty much the same. Like, it's either going to go from, like, 12 million opening to, like, 3 or 4 in the second weekend, or it's going to go from 12 to, like, 9 or 10. It all depends on that word-of-mouth, because there are probably going to be people that, yeah, I'll wait for it to come out. It's probably not going to be good. But then if people are saying, like, oh, it's as good as the original, if not better, then maybe they'll go out and see it. The people that got suckered into seeing I Feel Pretty with their girlfriends the next weekend, like, well, if you don't want to see Avengers, we could see Super Troopers, may get into it. So, I mean,
there's a whole generation of people that were stoner college kids and watched this, and now they're stoner kids.
Now they're taking their kids. Right. Like, so I feel like... I feel like it's that second weekend is going to be the tell of this movie. Because even if it does open at 14 or 15, I think that's a good opening for it. But what's that second weekend? If that second weekend is 3 or 4...
Yeah, everybody that saw it the first weekend.
You're right back where you began. Yeah. But if that second weekend goes from 14 to like 9 or 10, that's a legitimate bona fide hit. Bring out the hit sirens.
That's a hot take siren. So whether or not it's a hit, we're going to have to wait a couple weeks to see that. But next week, we will be forecasting some things that are going to be hits during the summer movie season. We'll be doing our summer preview next week. It's generally a pretty fun show for us to do. Yeah, it's long. It takes a lot of work to get ready for. But it also helps us kind of organize what movies we're excited to see this summer. Super Troopers would fit on there. It's a movie that... since I found out it was actually going to be a reality, I've been pretty excited to see, obviously, Avengers coming out this summer. It doesn't take long to get to movies that I think are going to be really, really good. And movies.
I mean, Avengers comes out next week.
Yeah, movies that I really, really want to see. So we'll run down all of those for you. We'll set your summer viewing schedule for you next week. And then we'll get into, I believe we're going to do an Avengers episode, and then our anniversary episode comes up.
And then return to our regularly stupid list.
Regularly scheduled programming. But at least the next couple weeks will be pretty fun, so stick with us through those. And until we come back next week with a summer preview.
Keep it up.